Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. In the March-April issue of Mother Jones, centering on Wisconsin and education in Wisconsin since Act 10. It is titled, Who Moved My Teachers? Wisconsin's War on Unions Has Gutted Schools. The Rest of America Could Be Next. The author who is with us this hour begins the piece by writing, The School of Education at UW-Madison never used to have trouble attracting applicants with dreams of becoming teachers. The graduate program ranked fourth in the country by U.S. News and World Report until recently undergraduate program in elementary education received between 300 and 400 applicants for its 125 spots. Now, according to a professor in the program, it gets about one applicant per opening. And there have been other ramifications, a drastic teacher shortage, teachers facing larger class sizes, less job security, and in some districts, teachers have been asked to teach extra sections. So what's happened to schools, to teachers in Wisconsin since Act 10. Patrick Caldwell is our guest this hour. He is a Mother Jones reporter. He is a reporter in their D.C. bureau and previously covered domestic politics for the American Prospect and elections for the American Independent. His work has also appeared in The Nation, The New Republic, National Journal Magazine, and The Washington Independent. We have a lot of educators in our audience. I'm particularly interested in hearing from you this hour. Those of you who can join, or maybe you have retired from teaching, maybe you have thought about going into teaching and it's okay with you that Wisconsin has undergone some changes. Teachers have undergone changes in collective bargaining ability and in classroom sizes and in pay. Some of you may have decided not to go into teaching because of what's happened here. We welcome all of your phone calls, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. 486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We already have a ton of comments on this issue on Facebook, so let there be more. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Our pleasure. I hadn't really heard many hard statistics, and I found your opening paragraph to be very interesting. The number of young people who are applying for programs in education at UW-Madison has gone way, way down.
Yeah, that was really shocking to me, too. I initially started approaching this article just because I was curious, looking back, you know, 5-6 years now after Act 10, what was happening in the state to unions and to the ramifications of that. And I was just kind of casting out broadly and talking to people in the state about what the issues were. And everyone I talked to started talking about teachers and how the education system had changed and how obviously there was the big stuff that you hear all the time about how there are fewer people who join up and become members of unions and things like that. It was the further down unexpected consequences of it that I found very interesting and surprising. And one of those was this idea that there's a bubbling beginning of a teacher shortage coming up. And especially you can see that at the teaching colleges where applicants have gone way, way, way down. I mean, UW-Madison is a fantastic program. I've had friends who've been in that program. It's, you know, they one of the better teaching schools in the country, but there just aren't as many people who are applying these days, and they're not unique in the state in that sense. And a lot of the other teaching colleges out there have seen decreases in applicants.
An interesting sidelight, he didn't give his name or she didn't give her name because they didn't want to lessen their job prospects, but a Minnesota public school district sent representatives to a job fair last fall at UW-Madison, and they made a point, you write about boasting about the benefits that Minnesota still offered, even promoting having unions as a sales pitch.
Yeah, I talked to a current student who, yeah, he didn't want his name in there just in case he is applying for jobs in Wisconsin when he graduates. But it was fascinating that, you know, there was one of these college job fairs where school districts from Wisconsin or other states in the region set up, you know, booths and things like that. And they were going around talking to prospective the current students in the program, trying to convince them to apply for jobs in the district. And there was someone from a Minnesota district who was going around telling people, yeah, we've still got unions in our state. You know, you get all these benefits of tenure and things like that that you don't necessarily get in Wisconsin anymore. And it was that kind of surprised me that you don't normally think of school districts as selling unions as a good thing to job applicants. Mm-hmm. But That is one thing, though, that I heard talking to current teachers quite a bit, is that they've had a lot of colleagues leave for teaching jobs in different states and surrounding areas, you know, Illinois, Minnesota, Iowa.
And how many teachers left who may have been close to retirement age, but they were worried about not being able to negotiate health or retirement benefits and maybe losing some of those benefits, so they left the profession? Were there many of those?
Yeah, that's one of the other things I heard quite a bit from people, that the scrunch on teachers was happening on both sides, that you now have fewer people enrolling in, you know, the education programs such as at Madison, but that you also had a lot of teachers retire early, shortly after Act 10 passed, because Act 10 set it up so that, you know, teacher unions can no longer bargain over direct benefits, really, with their local districts. But a lot of those teachers had really good collective bargaining agreements before that that ensured good pensions and things like that. And so a lot of teachers who might have kept teaching for, you know, five more years or something like that, retired early so that they could get in while those pension deals were still in effect and could get better retirement. And so that's also caused a lot of problems, too, that you have fewer younger teachers coming in, and they, you know, are going to have to shoulder more responsibility. But then there's also now a deficit of experienced teachers in those districts. These are, you know, the sort of people who would be great mentors for incoming teachers, to really, you know, show them around and offer best practices and things that they've learned over their careers. And a lot of those people retired early and left before Act 10 could be fully implemented.
Mm-hmm. And Patrick, what about the workload of teachers? Has it increased across many districts in this state?
Yes, certainly. That was another thing that I was surprised, not surprised, but I thought was interesting and wasn't initially expecting when I was beginning to report this article. You know, I was initially expecting that this was probably because collective bargaining agreements, you normally think of them as just direct monetary benefits, you know, negotiations over salary or health insurance or pensions and, you know, direct monetary transactions. But a lot of these collective bargaining agreements also dealt with just practical job matters. And one of the big things that I've heard teachers complaining about is a lack of prep time, you know, having a open class session where they can catch up on grading or catch up on lesson planning and curriculum. And those were often included in the bargaining agreements that a local teacher union would make with a school district. Now that school districts don't have to do that, many of them have cut that prep time out of the bargaining agreement. And that doesn't necessarily, I don't know, as a non-teacher, initially that didn't seem like such a big deal to me, you know, an extra 45 minutes of teaching in a day. But that actually adds up quite a bit. You know, that's 30 more students that you have to grade and have to provide mentorship for. And without that, it adds a lot of extra time after work, too, to complete grading and things like that. And especially for those newer teachers who don't have the mentors there as much anymore, they really need that prep time to, like, bone up on curriculum and lesson planning, but mm-hmm. they're scrunched and don't have that opportunity anymore.
I believe you say in La Crosse, teachers and parents in the district were so upset about that they changed the policy and dropped the extra class that you had to teach.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, it's interesting. So much of Act 10 and these bargaining agreements were kind of framed as, like, teachers trying to, you know, grab benefits for themselves. But the lessons of sort of what's happened here is that a lot of these, well, sure, often teachers were negotiating for their, you know, take-home pay. A lot of these negotiations were also to the benefits of students. You know, teachers are not, they're not doing this. It's not, you know, it's a good middle-class career, but it's not something you go into to get super rich. These people really care about their students and their vocation. And so a lot of these bargaining agreements were best practices for actually teaching kids, and it's created some interesting alliances between parents and the remaining strength of the unions.
Mm-hmm. You also talk about the amount of money for education, which was cut by the governor some years ago. He's increasing the amount in the next budget, but it in some ways will make up for the money that was cut. How much money was cut? And when you look at the motivations for this, some will say that we had a budget deficit. The governor certainly will say that, and it had to be fixed somehow. Others will say that unions, teacher unions and other unions, tend to be democratic, and so it was a way to cut into the power, really, of the Democratic Party and supporters here in the state. What was it? Both? One or the other?
Probably both. I mean, to your first point, there were massive education cuts at the same time as Act 10 was put into effect. The state cut $792 million over 2 years in K-12 education funding. And then it also imposed restrictions on local districts, so that made it more difficult for them to actually supplement that funding themselves, although a lot of school districts have started to pass referendum to increase that funding. But you had these new restrictions on unions were paired at the same time with massive cuts to the education budget, which inevitably forced school districts to hire fewer teachers and add more lesson sessions for individual teachers and reduce pay and reduce benefits. And to your other point, it certainly was a political move at the same time as a budgetary move. Unions, generally speaking, are far more democratic, politically speaking. And Walker, I mean, subtly, he tried the time to say that he was doing it solely for the budget reasons, but then there were videos of him speaking to donors that came out of him saying that this was really a political cause and that you had to, cleave the unions apart and so that they couldn't be as politically important. And I think it's not a coincidence that the state probably voted Republican at the presidential level for the first time last year, since the unions there are just much weaker. I mean, the teachers union there, the main teachers union there, had 98,000 members before Act 10, and that's now below, they now have below 40,000. And that's the case with most public sector unions these days. AFSCME is far smaller and has far fewer members than before. And these unions used to sort of be the main political force for Democrats in the state. And removing the their membership rules, they have much less money to spend, and that money is much more directed at maintaining their membership rules rather than broader political activities than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting, though, that the ballot on the ballot was an increase in spending among how many school districts? There were quite a few that had referenda in the last November election, and many of those passed. Some of them didn't. I'm wondering which ones didn't and how many did pass.
There were quite a few actually last year. It was 67 on the ballot in last November, and 55 of them passed. I didn't actually crunch to see the ones that didn't. That is an interesting question that I'm curious what those districts' differences were there. But that's a pretty resounding success margin, 55 of 67. So clearly people in their individual districts are starting to notice these effects, and, schools are institutions. People know the teachers and the, school employees in their districts, and hearing about teacher shortages and hearing about the hiring problems that they have and how their children are being impacted by the lack of prep time and things like that, I think resonates with people pretty well.
Mm-hmm. And the size of the classroom, too, more and more students.
Yeah, definitely. And that's been slowly trickling up. It's hard to get great stats on those, but everyone I talked to was saying that, it's just slowly creeping up every year. Because if you don't have as much money to spend, that's an easy way. You cut a class and you have to hire one less teacher and shuffle the students around among everyone else.
There's also been an expansion of voucher schools in the state and charter schools. It's something that the current education secretary is a big champion of. And I'm wondering if we'll see what's happened in Wisconsin. You talk about this in the article, Move to Other States. The strategy, you write, could soon become a national policy that Newt Gingrich has pointed to what's going on in Wisconsin as a model for the country.
Yeah, it's still early in the Trump administration, so we're seeing what they're going to do, but it definitely seems like that is their aim. The current education secretary, Betsy DeVos, has been a longtime ally of Governor Walker's, actually. She's donated quite a bit of money, through organizations that she funds, they've donated quite a bit of money to state causes for people who have attacked unions there. And Governor Walker actually spoke as the keynote speaker at the policy summit for a group called American Federation for Children, which Betsy DeVos is heavily involved in. So they have a lot of back and forth, and they seem to know each other pretty well. And Governor Walker has been out in D.C. a few times over the past few months and seems to be pushing this message for a national audience.
This is something I don't fully understand, Patrick. We all have had teachers in our lifetimes who have given us inspiration, who have moved us on one path or another, who have recognized what our talents are. We all realize how important teaching is in all of our lives, and certainly for our children and our grandchildren's lives. So my question is, why would you want to tamper with that? Because you would get a lot of feedback from people who are negatively touched by this.
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a great answer for that. I agree that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, part of it is, though, that unions have become demonized pretty well over the past few decades, partially because they've rescinded from American society. One of the last places where unions had a stronghold was in public sector employees, where, you know, private sector, the manufacturing jobs that used to provide good union membership have disappeared. And so I think it became easy to point to the public employees with the benefits of a pension and things like that that have largely disappeared from private sector and say that they're getting benefits that they shouldn't, that are different and out of the norm. And that made it a lot easier. And it's interesting, you know, Wisconsin's gone from being one of the most heavily unionized states in the country to below the national average now. It was already, you know, trickling down before Act 10. I mean, there are lots of factors that, you know, Act 10 did lots to attack unions, but there's lots of larger issues at play. But before Act 10, about 14% or so of the state was unionized. And since then, it's dropped down to 8%.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you. I'm very interested to hear from people all over the state. What's happened to education in your community in the 6 years? It's hard to believe it's been that long since the passage of Act 10. The latest piece in Mother Jones from our guest this hour is titled, Who Moved My Teachers? Wisconsin's War on Unions Has Gutted Schools, and the Rest of America Could Be Next. Our guest is Patrick Caldwell, Mother Jones reporter, and here is how you reach our conversation. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter, @KDunnShow, and we'll be with you in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. All right, lots of phone calls. Let's jump to them. Mark in Chippewa Falls is first. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good afternoon. I don't think anybody should be surprised in the least that teacher numbers are dropping off in this state. Without union protection, if the money is not a big deal, people don't go in to teach it. I sure didn't, knowing we were going to get rich. But as I moved along, I understood that you needed, number one, benefits, number two, protection. Needed protection against plants that were getting big, against reputations that were being blown out of proportion, and against administration that was either shoddy or they were just stretched too thin, like just about everybody else was. And then they said, look, we don't have time to do all this evaluation of teachers, and I believe them. So you need the protection that a union gives you, and without it, people see clearly that going into that without a great deal of money besides is going to be very, very bad for them.
Thanks.
Thousands.
Thanks, Mark, for the call. Patrick, would you like to respond?
Yeah, no, that's certainly true. It is interesting, the stretch thin argument. That I think that was something that didn't really come up as much from the anti-union side during the Act 10 debate. But so much of these agreements and the protections that unions offered were not just direct benefits, as I said earlier, but were to protect teachers to make sure that they were actually good teachers and they had time to be in the classroom and to spend time with their students and give one-on-one instruction. And, you know, that's why people go into this. People go into the career because they want to help kids. And without these sorts of agreements and that protections, teachers are far more stressed out and don't have as much time to devote to those issues.
Thanks very much for the call. We have a lot of people writing on Facebook. Marcus writes, I was a UW-Madison 2013 graduate, then licensed at UW-Milwaukee. I left because of poor compensation and career growth opportunities in the state and field. Now I live, work out of state in the private sector, but closely involved with higher education. Peg on Facebook writes, the governor has destroyed our education system in Wisconsin from K through 12 through master's degrees. He doesn't have an understanding or respect for the value of higher education. Your response to those?
Yeah, that's interesting to hear from that. I missed his name, but the person who...
Marcus, who
graduated from UW and got licensed to teach and then left. I mean, that's something I heard from quite a few people as I was talking to teachers around the state, is that many of their colleagues have, you know, who are early people who teach maybe for a couple years, leave and move out of state and work in something else, which is natural. You know, people start working in the career and they realize it's not for them sometimes. But it's interesting how many people are actually devoted and interested in teaching, but realize that Wisconsin was no longer a tenable place for them because they didn't have that career growth opportunity. That before, what happened was, you know, there was pretty defined career growth in terms of salary and, you know, tenureship and stuff like that. And now it's kind of a free-for-all. People have to negotiate for themselves, and sometimes that works out well. Some teachers have probably made more money under the current scheme. But for a lot of people, it kind of leaves them stagnant.
We go to Camille in New Berlin next. Hi, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm one of the teachers who left after Act 10 to hope to preserve some retirement benefits. But really what came down to it is that we didn't even have duty-free lunches after a while. Administration would call a meeting during lunch because it was the only time to get all the people together. We used to have aides. They got cut. We're doing the cafeteria doing. We're doing the jobs that the aides did. At one point, we were even told to dump our own trash because we were going to cut down on custodian. The whole QEO and the revenue caps, we're talking about cutting down the quality of toilet paper. We're talking about cutting down the heat at nighttime. The minute the kids walk out the door, the heat is turned way down low. So if you stay after school, you need to wear a coat in the wintertime. The job, when I talk to students in college and they say they're going into education, I tell them to change now. The job has become impossible. A friend of mine is 30 years old. She has a 2-year degree in ultrasound tech. She makes as much as I did for teaching for 33 years without a master's degree.
Patrick.
Wow. That's really interesting to hear. Thanks for telling your story, Camille. That's one thing, yeah, I'd heard a little bit. I didn't actually get a chance to delve into this in my article as much, but I had heard from some people that similar stories to yours of school districts cutting back on the other things besides teaching budgets itself, you know, aides, which are exceedingly important for ensuring the smooth operations of the school and making sure teachers have time to spend time with students and making sure students are looked after. And I've heard similar stories, too, of custodial budgets being drastically cut where, you know, some school districts, they used to have custodians come every day and now it's every other day or a couple times a week, which especially in, you know, kids are known for carrying germs quite a bit, so not having a custodian around to, like, make sure the place is clean does not seem like the best idea. Although I hadn't heard the thing about the heat being turned off at night. That sounds terrible. I mean, my mom's a teacher, so I know very well that teachers often have to stay and do a lot of work after the kids leave at the end of the day, and Wisconsin winters are harsh, so having to stick around with the heat off sounds really rough. It's the type of thing that a union would have probably negotiated in the past, but since they can't bargain anymore, they aren't allowed to.
I know that things have become a lot more difficult for teachers since Act 10, but when you look at the profession of teaching in this country, it's hard to find a time when teachers were held in much esteem, when they were paid for the work that they do at a decent level, when they were rewarded for helping people find their way in life, for their careers, for their knowledge. It's never been something that we value a whole lot as people in other countries do. Why is that? It's a peculiarly American thing?
That's a good question. I never actually looked that much at other countries' teaching systems, so I can't comment too much about that. But it does seem that has been a persistent problem in this country. But at least in the past, there were, you know, teachers banded together and fought for themselves mm-hmm. with these bargaining agreements. And that doesn't happen in some states like Wisconsin anymore. And in Wisconsin, I think it is interesting that I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head right now, but for a long time, Wisconsin was around the national average or above the national average for teacher pay per student. And in recent years, that has fallen down, where the state now spends less than the national average. It spends, overall spending is still about the national average per student, but in terms of benefits and pay to teachers, it's below the national average.
Thanks, Camille, very much for your call. Glenn in Stevens Point is next. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on two things that you had mentioned. Number one, the issue is just in our school board Monday night, we had, you know, three more young teachers resign. The same sort of issues that another caller had mentioned, that just it's not necessarily there for them. And it's unprecedented. I mean, I've been teaching for 20 years, and in the past 5 years, I've seen a lot of coworkers just walk away, partly because of the idea where there's no guarantee of what you're going to get, not even a raise based on inflation. And then there's no guaranteed raise, at least in our district, was for the past 5 years. Like, nothing. 5 years, you just keep the exact same pay. But on the positive side, I think the idea of Wisconsin being progressive, I think it's coming back, at least in some districts. You hear some stories where the idea of administrators sitting down to talk to teachers and making binding agreements, that makes sense. We used to do that all the time. I was heavily involved in our union, and that's what we did. Met every month with building level administrators, superintendents. Those things work. The idea of providing a retirement benefit, even if you don't have to, because professionals that are ready to leave the profession, who make much more money, open up the door for those who are coming in, and it actually is a cost savings. All issues that I think school districts that have figured it out, they don't have the money. They really have to focus on the soft sells, the sense of the community, the treating you right, the idea where we haven't come full circle. It has been devastating to our profession in Wisconsin, but I got to be positive because, honestly, I believe I got 20 years left of teaching. But I think people who are figuring this out, boards, superintendents, are going to be doing well, but it's still in the minority, especially with the rural communities who just don't have the money to offer those types of things.
Yeah, exactly. It can really vary from rich district to poor district. Those three teachers who recently quit, Glenn, what are they going to do now? Do you know? Were they tried to did anybody talk them into trying to stay?
I'm assuming some are leaving. I'm assuming some are just walking away from teaching. Others maybe leaving the state. As far as the ideas, as far as the specifics, there's nobody who's jumping ship, but you're also finding that too. Districts who can poach people saying, hey,
yes,
I can offer you a raise
right
for 1 year, that type of thing. But as far as this case, my understanding is they're just leaving teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've heard Journal Sentinel reporter did a wonderful analysis of teachers moving to different districts to get higher pay. So there's a lot of kind of raiding of teachers going on now in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's one thing I heard quite a bit, too, when talking to folks. And it's interesting. I mean, there's always been problems of school districts competing over the teachers, and the well-off districts always have had an advantage. But in the past, you know, rural or poorer districts could still offer good benefits to entice teachers. Even if, you know, rural districts had a harder time attracting people, but they could offer tenureship if people stuck around. Without that, they're at an even greater disadvantage than they have been in the past. And so those schools are where you really start to see the shortfalls coming in, where you see teachers resigning and there are no longer good applicants applying anymore, and they're struggling to fill the spots. And the state's even had to increase the number of, like, emergency permits for teachers to qualify to teach for a year, just because there aren't enough qualified applicants often.
Mm-hmm. Well, there must be a number of people in Wisconsin, and certainly a number of people nationally, because the Secretary of Education is not a huge fan of public schools. People, listeners, have reminded us via Facebook that this governor won a recall election, and then he won re-election. Betsy DeVos is the Secretary of Education. The President of the United States is interested in private schools and in charter schools and in voucher schools. Everything is changing in this whole regard. It's not just Wisconsin, right? I mean, people have voted for this.
Oh, certainly, yeah. And I think Wisconsin, sort of, as we said earlier, is a preview of what's to come. It's funny, I talked to one teacher who was a former president of the Milwaukee schools union, and he said that he'd often go around talking to giving talks at conferences and things like that, and he'd always start out by saying, I'm from Wisconsin, I'm here for your future, and there's some lessons that you should learn. And in so many ways, Wisconsin has been a preview of what's going on nationally, and that this is not a unique thing just to Wisconsin. But it is still interesting that it, I think, has been ahead of the curve on that.
Mm-hmm.
As you can, and you can see, Minnesota sends representatives to the state job fairs and
right.
people to come teach there based off this.
Glenn, thanks very much for your call. Amelia in Madison, hi.
Hi there. One piece that's missing from this conversation, or at least I haven't heard it since I tuned in, is how, you know, elections are impacted out, obviously, by voter turnout. And I often hear people say, well, where, you know, and where are the people of color that are voting? Where, why isn't there a greater turnout? And you know, and I've worked on elections, and I've heard this question asked, and how that relates to this is, for some reason, we have a really difficult time when we're talking about the needs within our schools, about how to meet the needs of children of color, and that the school-to-prison pipeline is of utmost priority above everything, and that increasing teacher pay does require a particular governor in place and a particular legislator, and you need to be able to elect these people. And if you're not listening to parents and communities saying, these schools do not feel inclusive to children of color, and teachers of color, I mean, you look at the mass exodus from UW Madison last year of employees of color, they get, you know, the pay's not that bad, but it doesn't feel welcoming or inclusive there for people of color. And we just had an opportunity in Madison to elect a woman of color school board, a black woman, Ali Muldrow, and we again messed that up, and she would have been able to look at the environments within our schools to make, you know, see how they're inclusive, see how, you know, perhaps why black teachers would not want to work there, because pay isn't the only reason why. And so inclusivity, I believe, and then the lack of inclusivity and the lack of willingness for our largely white-run school districts to listen to what parents of color and children of color want will continue to lead to the same outcome, and I firmly believe that. And
all right. Thank you, Amelia. We need to move to other callers, and yeah. We will bring up your comments, hour two on our show, when we're talking about exactly the issues that you've been highlighting. Thank you very much for your call. Joan in Eau Claire. Yes, go ahead, Patrick.
Sorry to jump in. There is one interesting point with that, with the teacher shortfall. The Wisconsin Budget Project put out a report earlier this year that was really interesting on this, and one of the points that they really made that I, you know, they had some very shocking stats on was the lack of diversity in the teaching pool with this shortage. Demographics of the teaching pool don't represent the students that they serve. They found that for every 11 white students, there was one white teacher. But in terms of African Americans, it's one African American teacher for every 79 students. And so the student body is far more diverse than the population they're being educated by.
Let's go next to Joan in Eau Claire. Hi, Joan.
Hi, good afternoon. Scott Walker is bought and paid for by his very wealthy Republican political donors, and Scott Walker has done their bidding since 2011. It's not that Walker doesn't understand what he's done. He knows very well what he's done. He's done everything he could to destroy public education in Wisconsin, K-12 and University of Wisconsin. I have to believe that Walker's wealthy Republican political donors do not want all citizens to be educated. They want only the wealthy citizens to be educated. Imagine what it would be like with public education completely decimated in Wisconsin. How long would it take for charter or voucher school tuition to skyrocket and be affordable to only the wealthy? And thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thanks, June, for the call. Patrick.
Yeah, I mean, Walker has always been very tied into the national Republican movement, especially when he was first elected and rushed forward in Act 10. That obviously became a major national story and ran for president briefly. And so, yeah, he's definitely tied into that world, and that world, I don't know if I'd go quite as far as saying that they want to get rid of public education, but they are far more skeptical of it and far more open to things like charters and vouchers and private schools.
Well, I don't quite get that either, because it is true that still almost everybody is educated in public schools. They are, as you said, the cornerstone of many communities. People like their public schools for the most part. They don't know all that much about the charter schools and about the voucher schools, which have expanded significantly in the state of Wisconsin. So why mess around significantly and dramatically with something that has been such a staple of American democracy, actually?
I mean, I think the argument they would make is that vouchers and charters are more choice. You know, it's the free market at work more so than the government imposed you have to go to this school. It provides parents more options. The downside to that, though, is that maybe that works for some people, but then removing funding away from the local public school hurts a lot of other people. And it's not as, you know, vouchers are not open to everyone. That everyone can take advantage of it. It often takes a little bit of extra funding on your own part, and that leaves other students behind.
We go to Troy in Muskego next. Hi, Troy.
Hello. 2 points. One of them with the last caller, I think one thing she didn't touch on, which I think she was hitting around to, is there's a lot of donors that own factories, and they need, and they're having a hard time finding people to work for these lower wages. So they're tied in with Scott Walker, and they're encouraging us to put our kids in technical programs and go work for $12 an hour. That's point number one. The second point is people need to follow the money trail, and if you're going to do some real investigative reporting, I actually did some investigating, and I found that I'm actually a teacher in a charter school. Charter school teachers do not belong to the state pension system, okay? There was a law that was passed in New York during the Clinton administration that if a wealthy business owner wants to open up a charter school, they can start a hedge fund. And after 7 years, the hedge fund gets doubled in returns. So all these wealthy people that donated to Walker and his campaign, they're also sit on boards. A lot of these wealthy people sit on these boards for these charter schools. And here's the interesting thing. Because I can't belong to a pension, state pension, the board, they're connected with the investment agencies that come into our schools, and they do 401Ks and 301Bs investments. Those are tied in with the same people that are in charge of the hedge funds at these schools. So it's actually a way of privatizing and making money out of these schools for the Republicans and the wealthy business elite.
Are you paid well, Chris?
No, actually, I'm non-union, and which is interesting is there's a lot of things I don't have. Being in a charter school, and everybody knows statistically, charter school teachers get paid less than public school teachers. And I'm not, you know, I think public, there is a language between, there is a spot between public and charter schools that have both have good the best practices for children. But there's definitely the non-union approach with charter schools, which is to make the people that are in the hedge funds of those schools very well.
All right, thanks, Troy, very much for your call. Chris is next in Chippewa Falls. Hi.
Good afternoon. You know, this is, of course, a very interesting conversation to me. And while we're talking about the effects of Act 10 on teachers, we need to remember that ultimately it is the students who are going to suffer these consequences. When you take away the protections of the collective bargaining agreement for that protected teachers, it also protected students against things like class size and how many hours a day that teacher could be in the classroom. I personally know of a teacher in southern Wisconsin, an art teacher, who when that collective bargaining agreement was gone, their administration had her in a class 7 hours a day, no break, teaching something different every hour of the day, 30-plus kids in a class, including special needs kids. You know, that's not good for her. It's not good for kids. And I think that's where we have to always focus on is what is the effect on our students? Because if we don't have successful students in education, where are we going to be in Wisconsin? Mm.
I think that's very important. It has to be foremost in the minds of everybody who's looking at education. Is it in Wisconsin from what you discovered, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the interesting lesson of Act 10 to a certain degree, that I think a lot of these consequences were unintended consequences, that people were thinking of just how to save money, how to weaken union power, but I don't think they were trying to necessarily hurt public schools and hurt, you know, the education that students were going to receive. But these things were tied together. Teachers weren't just money-grubbing people trying to get the best for themselves. They were negotiating and trying to create structures that were good for themselves, sure, but also good for students. They are the people on the ground. They understand what they need. To an outsider, maybe teaching 7 hours a day doesn't sound like that much, but for teachers, they know that that's too much time, and they need more time outside of lessons so that they can spend more time one-on-one with students and things like that. And so I think that we're starting to see, you know, this is why I wanted to actually go back and look at this, is these laws pass, and they get a lot of attention when they first pass.
Yes.
But there's unintended consequences that happen a few years down the line that no one foresaw. And I think this teacher shortage is a really good example of that, that people weren't foreseeing. And no one was talking about that or thinking about that at all when there was the, you know, protest at the state capitol 6 years ago. But 6 years down the line, once this law is, like, fully cemented and changed the state, it has wide-ranging things like that.
And those figures are only going to grow, this shortage, if what's happening at UW-Madison now in the education program is going to continue. Don't have many applicants.
Yeah, exactly. And those applicants who are there, as the ones I talked to, are thinking of looking elsewhere to teach. And who knows, maybe if this does become the national trend, there won't be other states for them to go to where things are better. But for now, you know, the combination of diminished enrollment and better opportunities elsewhere are going to just compound the problem every single year.
Patrick Caldwell is our guest this hour. He has a piece in the March-April edition of Mother Jones, Who Moved My Teachers? And that's what we're talking about. He concentrated on what's happened to teachers and what's happened to schools and students in Wisconsin and unions since Act 10, which passed 6 years ago. Isn't that amazing? 6 years ago now. Our phone number, one line is open, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. Our number is 800-486-8655. A listener writes this, Patrick, in districts like Green Bay, we not only suffered the loss of our experienced mentors in the aftermath of Act 10, but watched school board members and district administrators immediately act to dismantle decades of collective bargaining in our contract, something we never would have predicted, that culture of shared goals has been destroyed. Others have said that it hasn't in other districts. Does it vary from district to district in Wisconsin, do you think?
Oh, quite a bit, yes. I mean, partially it's the budget constraints that districts face pose different challenges, and so probably gets school boards to entrench more in certain instances. But in other instances, you saw, what this listener was describing, where the school board immediately went to cut the benefits and to rip apart the collective bargaining agreement. And that's happened in some places, but then as the shortage and other issues and, you know, prep time issues and things like that have come about, you've seen some school districts go back to the teachers' unions. And while they can't formally negotiate a new collective bargaining agreement, I did hear from some local unions that they've had good working relationships with the local school board, and they are able to talk and influence what's in the handbook that is distributed each year for teacher benefits and things like that. And so I think there's a realization in some school districts that they need to listen to teachers' interests a little bit more than they were initially were. Although in others, I mean, there was one example I wrote about in the story of down in Kenosha. That was a school board that was amenable to working with the local union, but then national right-wing groups came in and devoted a bunch of money to kick those people off and get more conservative people on who are now much less friendly to the local union.
Funded by the Koch brothers?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Jake is next in Oshkosh. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Kathleen. Great show. I come to the conclusion that this is pretty much the dismantling of the public schools with regard to public funding, and it all involves the Wall Streeting of public education, meaning public taxpayer money going to Wall Street corporations, and they will be basically taking over the teaching profession.
Thanks for your call. You think you agree with that, Patrick?
That's interesting. I did not look quite as much into charters and things like that for my reporting here, mostly because I was curious about the current state of the public schools there. But it definitely is tied into this idea of privatizing it. And, you know, I think the belief in charters is fairly sincere from some people, but it is also a for-profit venture often. And so moving away from a public good to a private enterprise will probably enrich some people.
Thanks, Jake, for your call. John in Johnson Creek. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I was kind of mildly surprised and unsurprised when your guest kind of admitted that he didn't realize that collective bargaining agreements could actually benefit the students, because there's a perception that, and I think this is fostered by the conservatives, who don't like a public education because they pay for their, they raise taxes and so on. And you're right, I just heard profit, not profit, but it seems to me that the propaganda, which has been attacking to try and get rid of progressive and New Deal legislation for the last 70 years, it has been successful. And a lot of people don't realize what the union is trying to do for the worker. And I think plus the attacks on public education have just made it so that everything is bad, and that's not the case. And it disturbed me enough, and I've been in teaching long enough to know that you can see the trends, and unfortunately we're being saddled now with the results of this, I consider, propaganda attack.
Thank you, John, for the call. And is the trend going to continue, do you think, Patrick? What do you see for public education 5 years down the road in Wisconsin and in the country?
I mean, it certainly seems like this trend line is going to continue in Wisconsin. One thing I thought was really interesting with Act 10 that I heard a lot about from talking to teachers is one of the provisions in it, too, is it makes it a lot harder for local unions to certify themselves. Before, it used to be kind of simple votes, but now every single year, each local teachers union has to recertify that they want to be in the union, and that requires a vote of 51% approval. And that's not just 51% of people voting, it's 51% of the total chapter of people. Unlike other elections, say when political elections, Governor Walker runs for re-election, he has to win above 50% of the people who voted, but that's not the entire state of Wisconsin. But for these unions, it's become very hard that they have to get everyone to actually turn out and vote every single year, and they spend thousands of dollars on it. And a lot of unions have failed at these votes just because it's a logistical hurdle. There's one that I thought was really fascinating this past year I believe it was in New Holstein. It was a union chapter where there were 42 people who voted, and they all voted that they wanted to remain in the union. But there were 42 other members who just didn't vote for whatever reason. And so that union is no longer there because even though everyone said that they wanted it, the people who abstained carried the day. And so there were, I believe, about like 11 or so, 10 or 11 affiliates of the main union there who lost the recertification votes this year. So I think you're just going to see even the remaining power they have kind of continue to dwindle year by year unless there are legislative changes.
Mm-hmm. And we'll end, I'm afraid, on a sad note. We've had a lot of Facebook comments. Marsha writes, I happily funded my daughter's education because she's a born teacher. She's quite seriously considering leaving teaching now that a few years' experience have wiped the stars from her eyes. It's incredibly sad because she has so very much to give her students. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah, no, that's sad. I mean, it's a... I'm biased, as I said earlier. My mom is a teacher, so I grew up as, thinking of teachers as a good profession. But it's sad to see people no longer feeling like they can follow it, even mm-hmm. if it is their passion and something that they'd be good at.
Patrick, thank you so much for being with us. Patrick Caldwell, Mother Jones reporter in the March-April issue of the magazine, is his piece, Who Moved My Teachers? He's a reporter in the D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones, and he's worked for a number of other publications as well. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this program, to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we'll be talking about white privilege, hour two of our program, with a professor who does meaningful workshops on this all over the country. Thanks for all of your contributions to the hour that you just heard.